Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in. This is Mike Lafferty, your regular host, or irregular host, of the Vigilance Press podcast. And here with me today, we've got two luminaries from the world of mutants and masterminds. First off, the man chuckling in the background is goes by the handle Raoul Duke on the Atomic Think Tank, but you know him as Christopher McLaughlin, author of too many mutants and mastermind supplements to mention, including the very recent hero's journey, Silver Storm. How you doing, Chris?
Fighting a nasty cold, but other than that, I'm well, sir. How are you?
All right. Thanks for being with us tonight. And sitting in the virtual chair next to Chris, we have Mr. John Lighthouser, line developer for M&M3E. How you doing, John?
Good. And I'm virtually sitting here poking Chris in the side.
That's cute. All right.
Well, thanks to the cold medicine I'm on, I can't feel it.
Nice. Hey, just up top, we got to pay some bills before we get into a conversation. James, I believe you had some messages to impart about Noble Knight Games and how wonderful they are.
Dan, our wonderful, although absent today, co-host, has told me that Noble Knight is currently running a big sale on all of their all of their Fantasy Flight games. So that's like the Call of Cthulhu game, Arkham Horror, Warhammer board games, and Talisman. So all that stuff is slashed over at NobleKnightGames.com, so you can get some good deals going on there.
Nice. A little known fact, the guy at Noble Knights Games are all professionally trained masseuse. So if you're a little stressed out from gaming while you're in there, just tell them about it.
For that masseuse?
Masseuse.
if they're guys, they're masseurs.
Masseurs.
So. There you go. Just, ew, that kind of smells. That sounds like it would smell bad.
Anyway, just tell them you're feeling a little stressed, and they'll be glad to help you out. Maybe adjust you a little bit. This is true. This is not making any of this up. Additionally, Vigilance Press just released Crown Guard: Heroes of World War II from Instant Masterminds Third Ed. It's got art by John Gibbons. I want to say we got a couple pieces of Adrian Smith in there too. If you're doing a Golden Age game with Mutants and Masterminds Third Ed, maybe using the Golden Ed supplement written by Mr. McLaughlin here.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you.
I pimp whenever possible, sir.
Right. Move that backlist.
It's on sale now at RPG Now for just $2. What else can you buy for $2? Not much, let's be honest. In these troubling times, Vigilance Press is your friend with recession breeding supplement prices. And with all that out of the way, a lot of new releases lately for Mutants and Masterminds, Mr. Lighthouser. Anyone in particular that you want to talk about right off the bat? Which one has you most excited?
Well, everything's exciting, but the thing that I am most excited about is the GM kit with the quick start character generator in it, which I and Leon Chang, who on the Atomic Think Tank forums goes as Taliesin, I inventively go as John L. And I know from talking to you guys, I sent a copy of the document over, and you recorded a podcast of the of some characters being generated.
We're editing that now, even as you speak.
Yes, and yep. So I don't know if that'll be up before this one is, but
very doubtful.
Definitely going to be worth a listen. So
we had some technical difficulties, so we're having to patch that one together from disparate pieces. So that one will probably come up later than this one, but the irony of that. But well, we did have a lot of fun with it. One of the things that kind of shown out about the random generator was that we were able to get three characters done in like 45 minutes, soup to nuts, just standing there rolling. And we did a round table. It was me, Jack Morris, and Mike. And we were able to put out three fun characters, and we invited people from the Atomic Think Tank to vote. So I'm going to put a poll up once we get that podcast up.
Hopefully by Monday. I need to get to John for approval first, I understand. But
have you guys already put up the characters, or no, you're going to?
No, we're going to have people in the Think Tank vote and see which one of the characters they want to put.
Okay. Yeah.
I created a costume adventure called the Corgi Avenger because my dog kept barking the whole time.
I thought we settled on the Hunter.
Well, if it was going to be a four-color lighthearted game, then the Corgi Avenger. If it was going to be a gritty Iron Age campaign, then maybe the Huntsman. So, you know, there you go. The ideal thing is that the character works either way. It's just all about how you role play it. So, one guy says golly, the other one does not. so, that then when are we? Is it? Am I a jerk if I ask about potential release dates? Is it hard to say? Is it too hazy?
You know, in fact, the GM kit and the booklet. The PDF of that may be available very, very, very soon.
Nice. Okay.
Because as I think you saw when I sent over the document, it's actually the booklet is
very close to
98% laid out. I need to do a little bit more checking through it to make sure there's not any weird issues with how things are laid out. Like one, you know, have a power that's in the same gray or white box with one that it's not supposed to be in with. And so I need to look at all that sort of fun stuff probably over the next couple of days and get that to Hal, who will then fix it up. And I think pretty shortly thereafter, like within the next week, is when you'll probably be seeing the PDF for that go up for sale.
Very nice. And ladies and gentlemen at home, that's Hal Mangold, layout superstar, yes, who does a lot of work for Green Ronin.
Yep. And then
now,
question
for you, John. For people playing along at home, the GM toolkit is going to come, the physical version is going to come with the GM screen, correct?
Yes. So we're having that produced overseas. So actually, once it goes up for sale, it'll be probably, certainly well over a month, probably more like 2 months until the actual physical product is here in the States.
Okay.
And that's simply because it's SCAD's cheaper to it actually makes GM screens able to be released by having them made overseas as opposed to trying to do that sort of thing in the States. But yeah, so that'll go up soon, and then we'll have the physical product out after that. And I think the plan is to have, once it goes up for sale, you'll buy the whole package as, you can either get it as a PDF or PDF in print, and you'll get the PDF right away, and it'll actually have the screens sort of sectioned off. So if you wanted to print them out and use them, you could.
Great.
Yeah, and then it'll also have the booklet in there too.
Excellent. So yeah, I really do. I think people are going to get a kick out of it when they hear us roll up the stats for the game, just how fast it moves. But yeah, hopefully if we get a chance to do another one, we'll actually remember to try and get one of the characters who actually has an array, because there are several characters in there that are quite complex.
I think if we're going to try, we might as well just say, hey, look, we're doing a point buy. We're just going to, you know, select stuff.
we're doing a pick buy. There you go.
Yeah, otherwise, we're going to be like, I'm going to keep rolling until I get a 10.
Yeah.
20 minutes later. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually something I cover right up front in the book is, you know, you can do it completely random by you know, rolling your d20 and going for it, and however many times you need to roll to get through creating a whole character. Or you can just kind of semi-randomize it, or just pick everything yourself. You know, if you sit down at a table and you're like, I want to play a battle suit, just flip to the battle suit, and you can either start picking stuff or you can start rolling stuff, however you want to do it. And you should come up with a pretty good character. And there's a lot of variation in there. I would love for someone to figure out like how many possible different character combinations you could get out of that book, because you know, it's a lot. It was a lot of work, and I think it's definitely, I think people are going to like it.
I think we estimated that just based on the archetypes, there's 20 solid, you know, 20 base archetypes, and then 3 or 4 sub archetypes for each one. So just based on the rough calculation there, that's at least 60 to 80 character types that are each customizable with, you know, skills and advantages and powers. So
yeah,
there's a lot of personality that you can get there just randomly or by picking if you want to.
Yeah, and that was actually an important thing when I sat down to first kind of concept this out, was I wanted to make sure there was enough. I wanted it to be so that at the end of the process you had a character you could play in a game. Obviously, right? And then second to that, I wanted there to be enough variation that you could roll up a couple of different characters, even of the same archetype, and they could be different from each other, in some cases pretty significantly. Like if you write up a totem character, that could be, you know, that could be a Spider-Man-like character, that could be a werewolf-like character, that could be a tigra-like character, that could be a rhino-like character. I mean, it's all contained within that single archetype. And same thing with battle suits. So you could play a military battle suit, like say one of the Rocket Reds, or you could play, you know, an Iron Man like battle suit. And there's a lot of variation even within a single archetype.
So which is your favorite archetype?
Which is my favorite archetype? You know, I haven't even thought of it in that way.
Or at least from the quick start guide, which one was your favorite to do?
That is a fine question. I don't know if I have an answer for you. I really like the ones that give you a lot of different variations with the different arrays. So like the battle suit is pretty cool. I like some of the options that we came up with for like the mimic and the shapeshifter and that sort of thing. Oh, you know, the one that I actually probably like the most is the summoner.
The summoner?
Yeah, so it's summoner / duplicator. So you can summon up a, let's see, the three options are you are a twin, so you're two characters in one, or you're three characters in one, and the stats are different for each of those. And then the other option is you summon up either an imaginary friend, which is what I called it, and it's basically like a Johnny Thunder type, or you summon up like groups of ninjas or robots or whatever.
Very cool.
Yeah,
I'm surprised. So you know, it was kind of funny because I did playtest the game, not the game, the die rolling, but I never actually wound up with a summoner. It just randomly never happened.
It's a character type that you don't see very often just because they're kind of a pain. And so I liked being able to put in some examples like, hey, if you want to play a summoning character, the examples in the book are basically martial artists, but you could change it to anything else. Like you could have two kind of medium powered bricks that are, you know, totally right upper powerhouses in I'm going to say champions. Oh no. In Mastermind's parlance, but you know, just strong characters with lots of armor and low defenses and, or, you know, low parry dodge sort of thing. But the summoner turned out really, really cool.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. So yeah. We've also had so that's what's coming up. And I'd like to
mention we had a art preview with the going to be on the outside of the GM screen and the GM GM kit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and that's up on mutantsandmasterminds.com back on January 26th. You posted the art from Imaginary Friend Studio. It's going to be on the screen. And it looks pretty sharp. It's actually the new banner at the Atomic Think Tank as well.
Yep. We had that commissioned a while ago, and they were working away on it. And I did a sort of an art overview on that too a while ago, and posted that. And really, with that art overview, looks like on the 26th, it was those were exactly the pieces I saw as the process was going along. So if you look at one of those every 2 weeks, that's basically my experience.
Well, nice. Hey, let's talk about, I guess you just had something on the Mutants Mastermind site, I want to say in the last day or so, back on the 9th. You guys came out with Anvil, a new threat report. And that is spun out of, it looks like, Chris's recent adventure, the Silver Storm. So maybe this gives us a chance to talk about both of those. Can you guys tell us a little bit about Anvil?
Sure. Chris probably doesn't know very much about Anvil, but in January we were featuring characters that were featured in the artwork of the M&M 3. And then in February, we're going to have a couple more characters that are featured in that artwork, but then we're also doing a number of these Stormer characters, so characters who gained their powers during the Silver Storm event that takes place in the Silver Storm chapter, the prologue to the Emerald City Knights adventure. So what we wanted to do was offer up basically like, hey, here's some examples of characters you could pull into your game out of this Silver Storm event. You know, Anvil is obviously incredibly powerful defensively, and not a bad strong guy either. But we wanted to kind of try and tie in the threat reports as much as we could into this particular release, because it does sort of open up the world, the Emerald City setting, and kind of give players a little bit more, or I guess GMs a little bit more stuff to play with.
Okay. Hey, Chris, could you tell us anything about the Silver Storm? It's if I remember correctly, this is the first in a series of adventures called The Hero's Journey. And it's going to be a recurring thing coming out from Green Ronin, or do I have that wrong?
Oh, well, we certainly hope it's going to be a recurring thing. that's it's the intention, at least. It's coming out in seven chapters, and I'm doing the preview, the first chapter and the last chapter, and there will be even better writers doing the middle chapters, so I'm just trying not to mess up the premise and the finish, basically.
So. And, you know, Jack was telling me that everybody pretty much voted together that you were the perfect person to start it off and tie it up, because you make the hard work look so easy. So,
honestly, what a magnificent, wonderful gesture on their part. I mean, it's, you know, to get that from writers that you respect and you admire and you adore. Oh, my gosh. I was probably insufferable for like a week after that. My head swelled so much. But it's a testament to their generosity. Let's say that.
Basically, as I understand it, so we've basically got the first one. I haven't actually played in it, but it's a joy for me because I'm actually going to get to play. I'm usually the game master.
Oh, so we should spoil it for you, right? We should tell you the whole...
Try not to spoil it for me, but...
It's his sled.
But what's...
Dark Side kills Batman. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Dumbledore dies.
Oh, no. Don't tell me that.
Vader is Luke's father.
What is this, movie ending phone all of a sudden?
Sorry. King Kong dies at the end.
She's a dude.
She's a dude.
You're making me lose track. So basically, John and Steve kind of coined the idea or came up with, or I think it was you, John, you said it was you two who kind of created the idea of the adventure series. And
right.
Did you guys kind of plot out the basic storyline?
Yeah, so every year the folks at Green Ronin get together here in Seattle and have what we call the Green Ronin Summit, very cleverly named. Mm-hmm. And it's this year I showed up and Steve and I had kind of brainstormed out some ideas over email. And I've really been wanting to do more PDF stuff. So as you can see with the releases of the Emerald City Knights and also with the threat reports, we're doing more and more with that and trying to, like, I would like to take advantage of the fact that people are in front of their computers and they want stuff to read, you know, even if it's just little snippets at a time. It just keeps, you know, it keeps everybody engaged. You've always got new ideas coming. And so I pitched this idea of doing basically a series of adventures that would come out monthly, or at least as close as to monthly as we can manage. And, at the end, probably collect it together and release it as a book and, you know, make sure to price everything at a reasonable rate so that, you know, it's both attractive to buy in PDF form. And then at the end, you know, if people need the book, then that'll be available to them too. But yeah, I wanted to come out with more things kind of along that line. And when I pitched that to the guys at the summit, they said that sounds like a great idea because we can kind of track to see how well it does. And if you know, if the audience is there, we will continue to release stuff in this sort of format. And hopefully it'll go well.
Excellent. Now, quick question for you. Anvil that Mike brought up. Anvil's the number five, right, of the threat reports?
Yep.
So you've been going for 5 weeks on this now. How are you guys getting some good feedback on that?
Yeah, they've actually been doing very well. We're not selling thousands and thousands of copies, but we're certainly selling enough to pay for the production of them. And the feedback on them has been fantastic on the forums. So I've been following it pretty closely because I want to make sure that we're giving people stuff that they can use. And so far, it sounds like we are. It sounds like, you know, people are reading it and kind of getting the idea like, oh, okay, I understand what they're trying to do with this character. I can use this, or I can work with the basic idea, and or, you know, hey, even if it's I like the picture and I'm going to write my own character, I am fine with that. you know, like anything to give GMs an easier time, I'm definitely in favor of that.
Cool. I had one question from the forums, and let me double check here who asked it. But well, I'll give you who asked it after you answer. But it was somebody asked. He was wondering about the inspiration for the villains that are being featured in the podcast. And of course, I'm using the ones that you guys gave me. So essentially, that is the threat report villains. I know that there are several different authors working on these. Did the concepts all come from one place, or did you guys let some of these guys just come up with their own characters?
No. A combination of those. So the characters that show up in the artwork of the Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook were all characters that were created either by me or Steve. And in fact, Fallout grew out of an example that Steve had in the book that said the heroes are fighting Fallout, and I just wrote down the name Fallout. We should come up with a character called this. but most of the others are basically out of my head. Characters that either had names that I wanted to work in somehow, like Dr. Shock was originally like, I was thinking about him as a hero, and then I was like, nah, it's really a better name for a villain. And then Steve had this great idea to combine sort of a like a zombie scientist thing, and that just totally worked really well. So we kind of went from there. But yeah, it's a lot of the characters were just names that I had on a list and said, we need to come up with some stuff for this. And this was back, you know, not even halfway through last year, where Steve and I started brainstorming out a bunch of this stuff and coming up with the characters. And
very cool.
It's been a lot of fun to come up with. And then a lot of the characters you'll see now in the next probably month and a half are actually Aaron Sullivan's characters. He was very excited to do some work on the threat report stuff, and so he's been writing up a whole bunch of guys. So
I know the name, but maybe you can give our listeners a little background. How long has Aaron Sullivan been working with you guys?
Oh, he's been working with us for quite a while, and I'd have to look at my books here, but I think he contributed a lot to like Warriors and Warlocks and Books of Magic, and I'll probably get this wrong, but he also did a whole bunch of work for me on the DC books, so the heroes and villains stuff.
Very cool.
Warriors and Warlocks, and he's done a bunch of stuff for us. And then we're going to also spread out some work on that. To like, Steve is very interested, Kenson is very interested in writing up a whole bunch of villains, so he's gotten me a list of guys, and I'll probably spread the wealth a little bit on those just to get. Just it's fun to get different people's takes on heroes and villains for a setting, you know. So, although I guess for this series it's mainly villains.
Well, hey, cool. We asked for non-rules questions, and we immediately got a whole bunch of rules questions.
That was Ronan84's question, by the way. He also mentions that he likes the bronze Silver Age feel that the characters have.
A guy named Maverick in our other thread, he wrote back with the rules question at first, and then we said, please, no rules questions. It's a short short podcast, guys, and blah, blah, blah. So he wrote back and said, non-rules question then, and this is, I think I said Maverick already. What would they do in their free time, assuming they had any, besides play M&M, of course? So that's to you, Chris and John.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, wow. I do Civil War reenacting. I've been doing that off and on since 95.
Have you won yet?
No. In fact, that's a classic reenactor's lament. You know, we'll be doing Gettysburg and we'll be wandering around. You know, this is the eighth year in a row I've done this, and we just can't seem to win the darn thing. So, yeah.
Sounds like a broken game. I don't know.
Well, we keep wanting to do a new version of it, but, you know, those guys in blue, they're just, you know, not as free-minded as we are, I guess, on that topic.
Hey, Chris, do you ever have a problem with other kinds of role players and reenactors, LARPers, showing up when you guys are doing reenactment?
Honestly, no, except for we did an event in Richmond once. We had clowns show up for no reason. Seriously, is there any time in human history where and then clowns showed up was a good development?
Almost never, no.
You know, I mean, that is just the harbinger of doom. I mean, that's like that's almost as bad as buzzards circling overhead. So, sure. You know, I was a private back in those days. I got to be part of the guard that escorted the clowns off the battlefield.
When I used to be... Oh, go ahead, I'm
something
sorry.
That features prominently on my resume to this day, actually. You know, I'm a clown escorter.
I am not going to say the joke that just came to mind.
Yeah, there you go.
John, how about you? Your free time.
Well, currently I am working full-time for Green Ronin, so that actually takes up a whole heck of a lot of time. But then I've got two weekly games that I'm in, which can I talk about it now? Because I think you're going to ask me later what games I'm in.
I'm going to ask you in like 5 seconds if you don't.
Oh, okay. So I'm in two weekly games, and one is an M&M game where I am actually playing Dragon Eye.
Sweet.
Because it's a group that I gamed with before I moved away, and now that I moved back, then I'm back in, but they needed a Mystic character. So I was like, I'll just use Dragon Eye because I have him right here. And it's actually set in Seattle, sort of in an Iron Age sort of setting, which is not one of my favorite settings for comics. I am actually a Silver/Bronze Age guy.
Yay!
Since I started reading comics in the early 80s. And then... the other game that alternates with that is a D&D game, 4th edition game, in which I started playing a Slayer from the new Essentials books. And then the other... So that's the Wednesday night game. It alternates. And then on Tuesday nights, I'm actually running a Dragon Age game.
Oh, sweet. I haven't played that yet.
It's a very cool little game. I really have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I hear a lot of good things. People I know who have tried it out have been very excited.
Yeah. If you're looking for an alternate fantasy style game that's a little bit lighter and fun and actually has, you know, some depth and that sort of stuff, if you get into it, it's really a good time.
Oh, cool. Well, that's good to know. Okay, well, hey, did you need to take off, John, or can you hang out for a few more minutes? I know you had a thing.
Yeah. No, I'll be around for a little bit yet.
Okay, that's cool. Well, since we still got you, anything else you want to touch on Moose Mutants and Mastermind before we amble into aimless pop culture discussion?
Let's see here. So we talked about the GM screen, which you hopefully people will be seeing very soon. It looks like we're doing pretty well about being on track with the next chapters of the
Hero's Journey.
Yep, the Hero's Journey stuff. So the first chapter... I guess the prologue is out already, and then chapter one is in Hal's hands now, so he is doing layout on that and getting the art in from the artists. And then
so
chapter two...
I could take that to mean you like my draft?
Yes. You should take that to mean...
It's hard being a writer, isn't it, Chris?
The writer's getting confirmation that he doesn't have to do a rewrite.
No, I'm sorry. I meant to email you, Chris. I'm sorry.
You heard it here first, folks.
But yeah, it's looking good, and then chapter two is also hopefully wrapped up, and then chapter three I'm waiting, getting stuff from the next or from the writer, and then it's going to be going through the development phase, and he had a bad cold, so hopefully I'll get that soon.
So you dropped the name a couple of times. I wasn't going to jump into this, but you've mentioned Heroes and Villains and the other DC stuff. I'm sure people will be interested to hear any kind of progress. Now, I've heard, you mentioned it on the website that your art connection over at DC had been seriously ill. Is he better, or did somebody else take over?
No, better now.
Good.
Yeah, the thing with DC is they have all of their art in archive, and most of it in the last 10 years is archived electronically, although one of the things that is sort of a pain is obviously they have to go and get it and find it and send it to us. And so the person who was in charge of doing all of that fun work ended up getting very, very ill, and that put us even more behind schedule. But Hal is currently, I just chatted with him probably an hour or so ago, and he said, I'm going to finish up a couple of things today. And he said, and then for the next week, I am pretty much doing the DC Heroes and Villains book hardcore, and you'll start seeing some stuff from me. So,
sweet.
I've already seen a few pieces that he's laid out, and it's looking pretty nice. And then it's—I think we're gonna get that off hopefully very quickly. So,
is there anything you'd like to mention that might be a little different, or you know, I was trying to think of you know, we've seen something of the characters in the core rule book, the Hero's Handbook, mm-hmm. but there any difference in the way you're going to be presenting characters? I mean, like the ones in the core rule book, we have like two pages for each character. I'm sure not every character is going to get that much detail, but is there any difference in the way you're presenting them in the Heroes and Villains?
Yeah, there's not much of a difference. They're going to look pretty similar. There's going to be probably one of the challenges we had when we sat down to first concept this book was we didn't know exactly how many words per page would fit. Because we don't know the art, and then obviously the stat block can be a very different size. So I think one of the characters with the hugest stat block is Deathstroke, the Terminator.
Oh yeah,
and, oh, gigantic stat block. Yeah,
he's just overcompensating.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, it's
he's
ridiculous.
Got like a Batman list of advantages. That's for sure.
Yeah, and he's also got powers, and I mean, it's skills. He's all over the place. Equipment, you know. So that's a really big stat block. So to say, oh, you need to write whatever 1,000 words on Deathstroke. Hey, no problem. I can write 1,000 words on Deathstroke. But then to fit that into the same space as another 1,000 word character, yeah, that's not going to work. So.
Hey,
you know, it's going to be a challenge for Hal. We're done with the text. It's all in his hands, and now he's got to make it work.
Hey, John, if I can bring something up, and maybe you guys knew about this. Obviously, all the Sentinels have been released through your website, and people can go there and download them. And they're great characters. We played them a couple times on the podcast. On RPG Now, you've got a PDF that says the Sentinels, and the sales text describes it as having all the characters, but one of the reviews says that this one only contains Dragoneye.
Yeah, I'm not a tech guy, but that was something that we were told by the guys at RPG Now, or One Bookshelf, whatever it's called, to put the characters in a certain way, I think non-compressed, and that unfortunately does not work correctly, or it didn't work in that guy's case. So I know our tech guy is working with their tech guy, but I haven't heard anything in a couple of days as to what's actually going to go on. We've actually asked them to, we've asked that company to respond to the review and say, you know, this was based on our recommendation, and it is not how we wanted to put the information up, but we're having to deal with the aftermath now, so we're trying to fix it.
Okay, that's cool. Sounds like you guys are in front of that one, so that's cool. Yeah. Hey, Chris, before I forget, I need to ask, you have any other Mutants and Masterminds projects simmering on the back burner you can talk about, or are we still under wraps on everything other than the hero's journey?
Well, as soon as John leaves, I can tell you tons. You want to know how this sucker ends? Just stick around another 5 minutes.
So that's a no, is what you're saying.
Unfortunately, I'm working, chapter one, apparently the draft got accepted, I'm told, chapter six, I'll be starting work on that here before too long, and, it rocks, it's cool, you'll love it, that's really all I can tell you while John's around.
Like working in that kind of a tandem situation where you're passing a project off, it's kind of like that kids game, right, where you know, one kid whispers into another kid's ear and comes around the room and it means something completely different. I mean, what's it like trying to pass off, you know, a project, a writing project like that, and then pick it up again?
Well, I tell you, John did the right thing. He assembled a great, great team of writers, and when I looked at the list of people that I was going to be working with, I was totally sold on it. And, you know, it sort of makes you blind to the fact that, you know, absent the people involved with it, it's a pretty insane idea. It's a wonderfully, beautifully insane idea. But, you know, like I said, with the team we're working with, it's worked out far better than any of us could have possibly imagined. And at least so far, there hasn't been any problems with the handoffs. So, like I said, I'm trying not to screw up at the beginning. So, oh, thank God, everything seems to have gone well so far.
Yeah, this kind of massive undertaking kind of reminds me of when DC did 52 a few years back, and they had like, you know, four or five different superstar writers, you know, all pitching in. So it seems pretty epic. I'm looking forward to see what you guys do with it.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead. But that's a wonderful comparison because 52 came out so well because, honestly, the first thing that popped in my mind was, if you remember DC Challenge that they did back in 86, where they literally would just hand, you know, one our team would do an issue and then just hand the story off to another team and say, go, see what you do with this. And, you know, nobody knew in advance what they were going to be. Ours is far better planned than that. But I thought, oh, good gosh, you know, things could have potentially gone that bad, but thankfully they haven't. That's a testament to John and Steve and the work they've done. Like I said, the great team they've put together.
Yeah, and we when we first sat down to come up with this adventure, we had like the really the only thing we knew is that we wanted to take new player characters from just being brand new to being like the heroes of the city and actually have had an impact on the series, right? And like, I have my notes here from doing the concept work at the summit on the adventure, and it's literally a page long, and there's 8 paragraphs on this page, a piece of paper that are each about a sentence or two long. I mean, I'll read you the first one. I can't, because it'll be a spoiler.
Jason Todd is back from the dead.
Yeah, I can't do it because it'll get something away.
Tell you what, Mike, you can text me when or type something in the text window when he's done, and I'll just take the headset off.
No, that's all right. But it's basically there's a big explosion and people get powers. I mean, it's literally like nothing more than that. And then we just sort of had this skeleton and built up from there. And then I wrote up it looks like a 23-page outline of what the adventure was. So every single chapter is covered in this outline and gives each of the artists or each of the writers a page or two of how that information should be turned into an adventure and what's going on. And
speaking of the art for it, just out of curiosity, how much art will be going into these things? And are the PDF, because it's PDF oriented, are you going to be sticking with black and white, or are you going to be doing some color work on these?
No. It's all going to be in full color.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's fantastic.
I think you can probably rely on most of the stuff for M&M and DC to be in color.
Very cool.
The only thing that's not in color so far is the GM screen booklet. That's uh-huh. black and white, and I think there's probably going to be three pieces of art in it because the charts take up a whole lot of room. There's a lot of words in there.
Yeah. The one I was looking at was pretty cramped.
I think I can offer a perspective, just a general perspective on what I've seen so far from what we're doing with Emerald City Knights, and that is, it really seems, and John can tell you whether this is by accident or design, but I got a tremendous sense as I was reading it that in a way it's sort of a list of like every single bit of feedback we've gotten since we started M&M, and you know, you really do see things that we have, you know, things we've heard from fans on the internet and whatnot, being worked into the system. You know, like a lot of people complained that, you know, Freedom City is great, but it feels kind of crowded with the heroes. Our team feels like, you know, the third or fourth best team in town. And if you've seen the opening setup of Emerald City Knights, and it's free, really, why have you not seen it yet? Go download it. You know, right from the beginning, it puts the players at the forefront of this city. So I just think that John and Steve have done a tremendous job of listening to the feedback and the response we've gotten over the years. And I think it really will show as people get to see more and more of this product come out. I think those people who've been with us from the beginning will be really, really, really happy. You know, it shows we do, in fact, listen.
What was that?
Everything I've seen, from having been in there. Go ahead, John. I was just filling.
He was just
I was just saying I didn't hear what he had said. I was distracted.
He was doing Sudoku, you know. There was he was checking out the X-Men First Class trailer. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I did that earlier. Chris is actually 100% right. The Emerald City setting was very much motivated by what we've learned over the years from the different editions of M&M and from Freedom City. We wanted to put out something that really made the player character is the center of what was going on. And obviously, if it, you know, depending on the type of campaign you're running or the series you're running, you could have the players be the quote-unquote Avengers of the setting, or you can actually use the Sentinels in the game to fill that role, and your player characters can be like the outsiders, or they can be the whatever, the street-level heroes like Spider-Man and that sort of stuff. So we wanted to make the setting as flexible as possible to appeal to both GMs and players and make it a workable setting as opposed to like, I wanted to play a Flash-type character. And, oh, yeah, you know, Johnny Rocket already has that filled. So we wanted to make it so that the heroes of your game were the heroes of the setting.
It looks like we're definitely moving in that direction. Well, hey, speaking of the X-Men First Class trailer, sounds like some of you guys have seen it.
I in fact, just watched it probably a half an hour before we started talking.
What'd you think?
I thought it was good. I'm surprised that it's set so far back in time, considering when the X-Men movies are set. I mean, it seems like maybe it is actually in continuity, but seeing stuff from the 60s was a little odd.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I like that it's a period piece, though. I think that's kind of neat.
It's definitely a different take on it. I guess, Captain America's doing a similar thing with the World War II setting. Although I think Captain America makes the most sense in World War II. Maybe the X-Men make the most sense in the 1960s. I don't know.
Well, and they probably do in a lot of ways, right? Because it was the time period of the Civil Rights Movement.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, and certainly Mutant. Well, and I think they're also obviously basing it on the First Class series, which was set back in time when the students were younger. But I can't remember specifically if they were actually back in the 60s when that, in the comic, when that was set, you know? I don't remember. But yeah, it looked good. It looked interesting, that's for sure.
Chris, have you seen it?
No, actually I haven't.
Okay. Well, hey, you're a Golden Age guy. I suspect you've seen the Captain America trailer, right?
No, sorry.
Chris doesn't have a computer.
Oh. It's all part of my reenacting thing. I have a telegraph, though. I've heard the Morse code version of it, and that really spectacular in that format.
You know, so many things are better in Morse code.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
The Green Hornet was great in Morse code.
Oh, yeah, spectacular. Yeah, yeah.
Did you see the Green Hornet, Chris?
How does the 3D thing work in Morse code?
You took the joke too far, man. I can't do anything with that. I'm sorry. Seth Rogen's humor kind of gets stretched by the 3D Morse code the factor.
Oh, the telegraph just punches you in the forehead.
Says it's going to go sleep with your mom, and that's pretty much it, yeah.
Oh, my.
You guys seen Green Hornet?
I have not. I have not.
Chris, I'm guessing by your silence you haven't either.
I did watch all 24 episodes of the 60s Van Williams Bruce Lee show when they ran that on Sci-Fi. I did catch that. I can talk about that.
How did you like that?
You know, honestly, having loved the 60s Batman show, which was from the same production team my whole entire life, I was just really let down by how serious and straightforward it is. You know, I mean, there's just something about it. You know, you're after like two or three episodes, you're just dying for Vincent Price to come out and make some egg puns, or, you know, you know, Cesar Romero to show up with his not so subtly whited out mustache. You know, and, you know, the fact that, you know, the producers couldn't figure out that, you know, maybe we should push this Bruce Lee guy to the front of the action. I don't know. I just really just, you know, 24 episodes of pretty solid meh.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe in Japan, I think it's actually called the Kato Show.
In China.
Probably a better way to market it.
In
yeah.
China? I'm not sure where it is, but yeah, it was.
That's where Bruce Lee was from. So they were celebrating, you know, his participation, so they were pushing it because of him.
Mm-hmm. Well, nice. Hey, Nathan Fillion is going to be a Green Lantern, and the Emerald Knights cartoon is coming out on June 7th, 10 days before the movie. And I got to say, I'm a little more excited about Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern than I was about Ryan Reynolds.
Yes. I would agree with that, too. Hey, at least it wasn't Justin Bieber.
or Jack Black.
In the it could always be worse category,
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, there was a Jack Black Green Lantern project being bandied about for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank God that didn't happen. And hey, Spider-Man. Yeah, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was about to say, the second worst superhero film that almost got made, Nick, right up with when Stan Lee was out of town one weekend at Marvel, and they sold off the movie rights to one of their characters. They were going to do a blaxploitation Silver Surfer film.
Oh, God. That's Hey, speaking of weird stuff, Spider-Man's in the Fantastic Four now.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's not the Fantastic Four. They're calling it the Future Foundation?
Future Foundation, yeah.
Yeah, Johnny Storm is shuffled off the mortal coil, and they're all wearing black and white unitards now.
I totally believe that is true.
Well, I know I say a lot of things that aren't true in this podcast. For instance, I bet the guys in Noble Knight really don't give great back rubs. Or maybe they do. I don't. Could someone research that for right, me and
you,
find out? But in this, all that dice rolling, they must have strong hands. In this case, this is absolutely true. It's on.
No. I know you are. You are telling the truth. I doubt that this will remain the state of things forever.
Oh, now I'm thinking maybe 2 years at best. Maybe 6 months.
Oh, yeah. Man. That's way generous. Overestimating compared to me.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, boy, Steve Rogers was dead for almost 18 months.
Yeah, sure, you can. Yeah, that's true. And Bucky came back, so they really blew everything out of the water there. So,
and Steve Rogers still isn't Captain America. Yeah, so it's, yeah, there's, you know, things occasionally do change for slightly longer periods, but yeah, it's a thing.
They'll change back.
I'm just glad it wasn't Sue Storm who died, because they didn't kill the girl for one time. And that's a good.
I actually thought I thought it was going to be Reed Richards. I thought Reed was going to be gone.
Really?
Yeah.
It wouldn't sound like the same team without Reed, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong. Or maybe they agreed with me.
How would it be the same without any of them?
Well, fair enough. And with Spider-Man, it's a very different team. But, damn, those kids have been kids for an awfully long time, haven't they?
Yes.
You know what's weird about comic families when they have kids is, you know, we've got Reed Richards and Sue Storm, and they have one kid, and haven't they had another kid just recently, and how quickly the other kid grows up to almost match the first one? You know?
Yeah.
It's like there's some bizarre growth rate disparity going on there.
Yeah, well, that's pretty typical in comics. I mean, characters are the age they are until they change suddenly. And, yeah. I mean, look at who's Red Robin now? Who plays?
That's Tim Drake.
That's Tim Drake. Yeah, yeah. He went from being like the kind of normalish 14, 15 year old until now. I swear he's like 22.
Yeah, just like overnight. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're drawing him completely differently. It's really, I mean, really surprising considering he's probably not supposed to be quite that old.
Yeah, it was almost overnight, and then the whole Damian showing up and saying, "Hey, Dad, how you doing?" That was Grant Morrison, and he does crazy, brilliant things all the time, and this one seemed to have worked.
Yeah,
I want to see the original version of that script where, you know, Bruce looks at him and goes, "I thought you were out of continuity."
It'd be great if Ambush Bug showed up and said that.
Oh, I'd totally buy that.
Like. What happens in a side story stays in a side story? Is this like Vegas thing?
Exactly.
Well, unless Grant Morrison wants it to not be a side story anymore, and then, you know. Hey, Grant Morrison had Animal Man in the JLA. They inducted him because of their respect for his animal rights position. And no, it's brilliantly written stuff. I think it's the only guy who's ever gotten into the JLA on, you know, that thin of a premise. So.
I don't know. What about the guy that shoots arrows?
All right, you got me there.
Yeah, at least he had powers, so.
Yeah.
Not that I dislike Green Arrow. I don't want to give anybody that impression. But, yeah, it's doesn't, you know, Superman, I shoot trick arrows, doesn't quite measure up, so.
Should I bring up the guy who got into JLA because of his breakdancing ability?
Oh, goodness. God. I try to pretend that he didn't happen. You're talking about Vibe, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. See, there's a whole era of the JLA I just kind of like. There's a couple different eras. That era, the Aquaman-led Detroit years, and everything that happened after Giffen and DeMatteis and before Grant Morrison. you know, that time period there too, I try to just ignore, because, you know, there was some weird stuff. John Jones was on the team, but he was pretending he was someone called
Bloodwind.
Yeah, it was just weird. It wasn't funny.
Sounds like something you should go to the doctor about.
Oh man!
You know, South Park had a joke about Chipotle Way, this product you buy to clean up the stink after you eat.
Yeah. Go say no more, please.
Chipotle, America's favorite urban food blog.
South Park, really?
I'm in Colorado. They're my homeboys, so I have to give them a shout out. So,
yeah.
Hey, guys, we are climbing dangerously close to the 1 hour mark, and I know John needs to go do his thing.
Yes.
Anything
I
else?
I have a very exciting homeowners association meeting to go to.
This is a glamorous life that can be yours, kids, if you pursue a career in RPG writing.
If you buy a house.
Anything else we want to touch on before we call it a night?
Yes, absolutely. I have something.
Go for it.
Today is my wonderful, patient, supportive wife's birthday, and I flat out would not have an RPG career if she weren't there loving me, supporting me, and making sure that the house didn't collapse while I'm busy stat blocking. So, happy birthday, honey. I love you.
And what's her name?
Honey.
Tanith.
It's Honey.
Happy birthday, Anna. Chris. Chris, you've been talking about
Hannah with an H or just Anna?
T-A-N-I-T-H, Tanith.
Tanith.
Oh, Tanith. I'm sorry.
She's named after a character in a Dennis Wheatley novel, of all things.
Happy birthday, Tanith.
You've been talking to us for an hour on the night of your wife's birthday?
Oh, you wouldn't believe what I owe her for letting me do this.
I guess it's a good thing we're wrapping up then. Well, happy birthday.
Oh, I'm a dead man. Okay. Oh, well, I'll pass it along to you. Thank you.
And Mr. Lighthouser, anything?
No, I don't have anything new. I hope everybody keeps checking out the threat reports. We've got some great stuff coming up. We're going to do our first team soon, which is, I don't have it in front of me. It's either 5 or 6 parts, and it's coming out. Let's see, we've got 3 more that are just normal. Oh, we have one next week who's another Stormer, so another random mutant character. And then we have Tribal, who's from the M&M art, and who's the other guy? Somebody else who's pretty cool. I'm, of course, looking through my information here, and I'm
still haven't done my favorite one yet.
Who's that?
Killshot.
Oh, no. I think she won't be out until we have a larger book later in the year that might center on Emerald City that I have to talk to Chris about soon.
Oh, okay.
Folks, you heard it here first on the Vigilance Press podcast.
Yeah. So, Tribal and Mindfire.
Ah, okay.
Two of the characters from the artwork in the book. And then after that, we're doing a team of villains called the Cyber Tribe.
Oh, that's sweet. Pretty cool. And that was in a band called Cyber Tribe.
Yeah.
We did Johnny Cash songs in the style of Eminem. It was pretty fun.
That's good.
That is also completely true. All right. Well, hey, folks. I appreciate everyone tuning in. And you guys remember the cheesy manner in which we close this podcast?
I do.
All right. This is new, Chris. We didn't make you do this before. I'm sorry we're making it do you now, but it's a tradition. So everyone, we're going to count to 3, and everyone says, stay vigilant, and then we sign off.
All right.
So 1, 2, 3.
Stay vigilant.
Nice. Hey, thanks a lot, folks, and tune back in soon. Bye.